Welcome back to Talk HR, the official podcast of New York City SHRM, where we connect, learn, and grow together as HR professionals. We are here every month to spark conversations and help build stronger connections, discover fresh ideas, and keep growing in our careers and as leaders. I'm Harrison Newman, VP of Marketing Communications at New York City SHRM and VP Benefits Consultant at Corporate Synergies. And joining me as always is our co-host, Sandy Mercurio. She is the VP of Sponsorship at New York City SHRM and an Employee Health and Benefits Consultant at Marsh McLennan Agency. Sam, we have another amazing episode ahead. Why don't you tell everybody what we have coming up?
Thanks, Harrison. Prescription drug costs aren't just a line item on a benefits spreadsheet. They're a national crisis. Health insurance premiums are climbing, businesses are struggling to keep plans affordable, and employees are caught in the middle, often forced to choose between life-changing medications and financial stability. The stakes couldn't be higher. Breakthrough drugs for cancer, diabetes, and weight loss promise longer, healthier lives, but can people actually access them? Meanwhile, pharmacy pricing has become a political flashpoint. President Trump's recent push for pharmacy benefit management transparency and global price alignment underscores what every employer already knows. America spends more on prescriptions than any other country, yet the system is broken. That's why we're tackling this issue head on, to demystify the pharmacy spend problem and explore how HR leaders can reclaim control without sacrificing care. Today, we'll be talking to Eric Levin, founder and CEO of Scripta Insights, about why pharmacy spend is exploding, why it feels like a black box, and what employers can do to cut cost and care smarter. We'll break down the problem, the politics, and the practical steps HR leaders can take to make a real impact.
Thanks, Sam. Before we move on, we always want to thank our sponsors and New York City SHRM sponsors, Jackson Lewis, Arutra, Remote, BAL, Barst, Beacon Hill Staffing, Sentinel Group, Stream, and HR One Systems. Thank you, as always, for being an amazing partner to New York City SHRM, as well as a Talk HR podcast. Before we bring Eric in, we have a special treat we know you'll all love. The HR world moves fast, and from time to time, we want to bring in HR leaders for a new segment called Fast Take, quick insights and issues shaping the workplace now and in the future. Today, we are thrilled to be joined by Pamela J. Brown, Executive Vice President and Head of People and Culture at Crunch Fitness, and more importantly, the Chair of Marketing and Communications for NYC SHRM. Pamela has been a driving force in creating innovative workplace strategies and fostering strong organizational cultures. Pam, when you think of the future of work, what themes or priorities do you believe will define the most successful organizations and leaders?
Thank you so much, Harrison. I really appreciate the question. For me, the future of work is about well-being, connection, and everyday behaviors that build trust. Especially with the rapid growth of AI, it's imperative to keep that human element alive. At Crunch, we live that every day. We're in the people business, and our product is energy, motivation, and belonging. So what does that mean? That means that behind every member's transformation is a team that feels seen, supported, and strong enough to give their best. So what are a few things that you can do in your businesses? I can give you some examples. I think beyond wellness programs, it's about creating spaces where people can be human, where flexibility, clarity, and recognition are part of how we work. For example, when one of our club managers adjusted schedules so a trainer could attend their child's first recital, that was well-being in action. It showed that care and performance can coexist. I think that in the future of work, we need to build that connection as the heartbeat of our company's culture. So whether you're in a club, a regional, or a Zoom call, people want to feel part of something bigger than their job title. So it's also about vision setting. Trust is the multiplier. It's built in small moments, not in grand gestures. I think of a time when a leader admitted they didn't have all the answers during a tough change. That honesty built more commitment than any perfect presentation could have. So the future of work is not something we're waiting for. It's happening right now, in every conversation, in every decision, in every act of leadership. The organizations that will thrive are the ones that make well-being and trust part of their operating system and not their perk list. When people feel connected and trusted, they add to culture and they deliver results.
Eric, welcome to the Talk HR podcast. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, really glad to be here. I have a long history of entrepreneurship and building businesses. And somehow 7 years ago, I found myself making an odd turn into the healthcare space. And now I'm sort of obsessed with all the things we're going to talk about.
So tell us a little bit about what the marketplace is from the pharmacy standpoint. We're hearing Rx all over the news. We're hearing it in every open enrollment meeting. We're hearing it everywhere. Give us a little bit about why people are talking about it. Why is it such a hot topic right now?
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is because it's really expensive and it's causing a lot of challenges for companies who obviously are plan sponsors and have to pay for this, and for their employees and their families. You know, a lot of times we talk of these people as being plan members, and that's the case in certain situations. But a lot of times we're talking about companies, and I think it's really impersonal. At the end of the day, these are your employees and their families. These people are, you know, working really hard for you, and you want to make sure they're getting the healthcare that they need. And with prices continuing to go up, that's a challenge, both for the employees and their families taking care of themselves, but also for the plan sponsors, the companies, because at some point it just becomes an untenable amount of money and is costing your business so much that something has to be done.
So why are the prices going up? What is causing these rises in pharmaceutical costs?
I can answer this question at about 12 different levels, depending on who I'm talking to. I'm going to start at the highest level, which is sort of the discussion I have with investors, right? So, because this is a pretty savvy audience, everybody that's going to listen to this is probably very well educated. At the end of the day, this is a capitalist problem. Like, why are prices so high? The answer is capitalism. And that's not to put capitalism down. I mean, I say that and people, you know, sort of shiver. But the reality is that we built an ecosystem where all of the players in the ecosystem have to make money. That is their first and primary fiduciary duty, except for the doctor and perhaps a pharmacist. And so when you build a system where everybody needs to make money, prices are going to go up. And a lot of the main players in these systems are publicly traded companies. So their fiduciary duty is to their shareholders. It's not to the patient. It's not to their customers. And so that creates a system where, you know, prices have continued to go up. These companies are some of the most profitable companies in America, actually. And so the way we look at it is, when you have a capitalist problem, there's only two solutions. There could be a government solution. I don't think anyone thinks that's a good idea. Or we can have a really good capitalist solution. And that's how we see ourselves. We'll get to that later. But ultimately, you know, what ends up happening is that there is also an information asymmetry market. So what does that mean in layman's terms? Somebody won a Nobel Prize for an economic paper on that. But in layman's terms, you have an oligopoly of sellers who know everything about what they're selling to a group of buyers who know very little about what they're buying. And anytime you have an imbalance of information and expertise between a buyer and a seller, the seller will do better than the buyer. And again, that is where a lot of the problems that I know, you know, Sam's trying to solve and we're trying to solve. If you can just make a more informed buyer, you have a pretty good chance of changing that marketplace.
Eric, you bring up a great point. So a lot of the pharmacy market is the centerfold is around money, right? At the end of the day, it's all about money. What does it cost an employer? What does it cost an employee? What does it cost the drug company, the manufacturers, the PBMs? Where are the hidden costs? Like, if we looked under the hood of the car, tell us about like the pricing model and what the state of the market looks like with fiduciary.
Based on the fundamentals we just talked about in the marketplace, the sellers are really good at figuring out how to maximize their profits. And so we have a system where primarily there's a PBM involved. So a PBM is a pharmacy benefit manager. And essentially, it's your pharmacy insurance. Interestingly, I think a lot of regular consumers don't even think they have a different insurance company. They think they have one insurance company and then, you know, they have United Health, but then they have a little CVS logo maybe on the back of their card. They don't actually realize that they may have two separate insurance companies. So PBMs are essentially pharmacy benefit insurance companies, and they play another role in the market, which is they help with the administrative burden of that. So if you go to a pharmacy and you want to use your insurance, somehow the pharmacy has to get reimbursed by the employer because it's we're going to assume here we're self-insured. Somebody has to do that. And that was sort of the original idea behind PBMs. And then they sort of found other ways to move up the value chain, do more things, but also be able to make more money on that. And so as they've done that, one of the most fundamental features of the way that it's evolved is they look at sort of what we call market basket pricing, right? So they'll come to a company and they'll say, all right, you know, it looks like with this many employees and based on your history, assuming it's been around for a while, we think your drug mix is going to look like X and it's probably going to cost you Y. And if we can bundle that all together, we can take your total spend and we can help you manage it. That's their sort of fundamental promise. They do that by not necessarily making every drug the lowest price. The total cost may be the lowest price versus their competitor, but within that, some drugs could be sort of considered overpriced and some could be considered really well priced. And that's where we start to get into kind of the hidden areas where suddenly they're making a lot of money and people are paying more than they expect and prices are starting to go up.
So, Eric, it's not very often we get to have breaking news, but earlier this week, Cigna announced that starting next year, they're looking at getting rid of rebates and giving those prices back to the employees. We're in the middle of, at this point, of recording still, and hopefully when it's released, it's over, but we're in the middle of a government shutdown where it's predicated on the cost of health insurance. We also have Trump RX and the best price model. I'm not asking you to solve the world's problems, but for an HR person, what do they need to know about this? What questions should they be asking their brokers or consultants regarding this? From a purely HR standpoint, what should they know and how would this impact their businesses?
It's such a great question. And I think that the most important place to start there is assume you're watching a magic show. If they want you to be looking at their left hand, something's probably going on their right hand, right? If there's a lot of smoke on stage, there's probably something happening in the background, right? So there's a lot of confusion here. I think there's a few trends that come together in what you just talked about, right? One is there's a lot of governmental pressure right now to lower the cost of pharmacy. A lot of that comes from voters of all categories. But remember, and this is kind of, I think, the most shocking thing that I tell people at cocktail parties when I'm boring them about my business is more people in America get their insurance from the government than anyone else. The government is the biggest insurer in America. So we don't have socialized medicine. How dare you? But yet more Americans get their insurance from the government than anybody else. There's only about 150 million people that get their insurance from an employer. Meanwhile, there's 340 million people in America. Where are all the rest of those people getting their insurance? Well, guess what? It's Medicare, Medicaid, right? So there's a huge burden to the American taxpayer if we don't bring costs down. So the government's all over this. And when the government digs into it, it's so complicated. And this is, again, it's sort of this is the magic business that goes on here, that it's really hard to figure out what's going on. And so there became a really big focus on rebates. And for a long time, this is, if we go back to this market basket pricing, this is how the PBMs were making more money. They were essentially, they create a formulary, which is a list of the drugs that they're going to cover. They put them on different tiers, which are how much will the consumer have to pay out of pocket? And that's meant to try to guide people to, you know, lower cost, better value drugs. Over time, that evolved into a little bit of a reverse auction system. If I have a good rebate, I'm gonna prioritize you on my formulary. And if I don't have a good rebate, I'm not. And so that allowed the PBMs to sort of, you know, have this money that was coming in to augment their profits that seemed opaque and hard to find out. But it's only one piece. And so there's been pressure on this for quite some time. And I would argue that today most rebate for most companies is passed through. But there's also these other issues, like they've set up group purchasing organizations offshore. And so how much of that rebate is there versus in the US? There's administrative fees, there's listing fees, there's all these different ways that they can augment their revenue. Rebate's just one of them, but it's an easy one to wrap your head around. And it also has one really kind of nasty effect that's why the government gets so involved. The rebate system has made it so that most drug pricing is based on a very high list price, like a manufacturer suggested price. And then the PBMs negotiate down to a net price. If you're not insured, then you don't have anybody negotiating for you. You're paying that high list price. And that's where suddenly you hear, oh my God, I went to buy my insulin. It was $700. I went to buy my epinephrine pen for my allergy and it was $800. It's gone up so much. But actually for insured people, it didn't, because they were getting these huge discounts but via rebate where the prices weren't going up. But it was impacting the uninsured and underinsured, which then was creating a lot of noise. So that's why that sort of changed a lot. The second trend, and I know that was a lot there, so bear with me, but the second trend you hit on is direct-to-manufacturer cash pricing. So what's happened is between like the Mark Cuban and Amazon type models, which is cash pay, because sometimes because of this market basket pricing, it's actually cheaper to pay cash than it is to use your insurance. So that's where they fit in. And then the last piece is this direct to consumer from manufacturer pricing. Well, if you're a manufacturer who's been sort of stuck in this system, and honestly, in a lot of cases being villainized when it wasn't your fault, they're saying, why can't I just sell direct? So that sort of popped up. And it's really difficult to do, honestly. The reason that it's kind of all of a sudden, in my opinion, a thing, and it may not last that long as a thing, is GLP-1s, right? So GLP-1s became so inaccessible and they're so in demand that it was sort of the first drug that people were like, I don't care, any way I can get it, I'm not covered or I have a huge out of pocket. So even if I have to pay $500 to buy it direct, I will. All of these things sort of come together. And I've said a lot, so I'm going to pause and I'll tell you how I think what the implications are for the HR people, which was your question.
Hi, everyone. This is Cassandra Walker, the Vice President of Membership with New York City SHRM. I'm excited to share an incredible opportunity with you. Right now, you could join SHRM, the world's largest HR community, at 50% off, exclusively through your local chapter. As a SHRM and New York City SHRM member, you'll have immediate access to so many great benefits, like our great national network with impactful NYC SHRM community of over 2,000 HR leaders right here in New York. Exclusive events like HR conferences, professional mixers, workshops, and networking happy hours, professional development opportunities, and SHRM recertification credits, career advancement, support, mentorship, volunteer leadership opportunities, and so much more. This offer is available for new members only and is only available until December 31st. So don't miss your chance to invest in yourself, grow your career, and join a thriving HR community. Join today at 50% off by using the promo code NEWMEMBERSONLY. Any questions, feel free to reach out to us directly at office@nycsherm.org.
Hey, HR leaders, we get it. You've got a lot on your plate, and keeping employees engaged and supported isn't always easy. That's where Beyond Med comes in. Think of us as your partner for all the things insurance doesn't cover: fertility, GLP-1s, Botox, med spa treatments, and even massages. We're a voluntary program that's easy to offer your employees and gives them a benefit they actually want to use. And when it comes to events, we'll help you pull off the kind of health fairs and appreciation days your employees will actually want to talk about on Monday. If that sounds like the support you've been looking for, just reach out to me at claudia@beyondmedplans.com so I can make your job a little easier.
Did you know that only 10% of workers strongly agree that their HR organization's practices currently meet their unique needs and preferences? That's why you need all your people information in one place. At UKG, we're on a mission to inspire every organization to become a great place to work through HCM technology built for all. Powered by AI and the world's largest collection of people, workforce, and culture data, our technology creates great workplace experiences and better business outcomes for over 80,000 organizations across all sizes, industries, and geographies. Visit UKG.com today for more information.
Just to remind people, the GLP-1s, for those who aren't as up to date, are the Ozempics, the weight loss drugs, the ones that when you turn on your TV have a really cool catchy jingle and your kids walk around singing all day. So that's what we're talking about, the GLP-1s, the weight loss and diabetes medications.
Yes, lots of dancing and people happy because they're losing weight. And they're amazing. They're miracle drugs, really. It's incredible what they're doing. It's great that more and more people are getting access. Now, with all that I just said, answering your question with even probably creating more questions, what does it mean for a benefits person? It means confusion. And I think that's where we come in, right? Is at the end of the day, there's all this going on, and it's highly likely that the benefits person is not a pharmacy expert or a doctor. They're not a pharmacist or doctor. Their employees and their families are not pharmacists or doctors. So how are they supposed to navigate this system and make sense of it all when there's all of these new options? Like, it was hard enough before. Now there's even more to kind of consider. And if we go back to my initial statement when I was talking in the clouds about economics and Nobel Prizes, what I was talking about was that when you have a situation where the buyer knows less than the seller, then the buyer is probably disadvantaged. Well, if we can create an expert system that solves that problem, we can maybe really change this market. So I think that what's really important here is there's two issues. One is transparency. We want to get as much understanding of what's happening in the market and what real costs are and where there's money being made. But that doesn't really help you that much unless you then know what to do about it. And so it's transparency plus expertise that really starts to change the system. And that's where Scripta comes in, and that's what we built.
So Eric, tell us a little bit about what Scripta does, how it solves the problem, how it helps with transparency, and how it can add value to an HR and finance leader's practice within their employer.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's fundamental to understand here is we can work with anyone. One of the things that really vexes me that's like so hard to understand is a market this big with this big of a problem that everybody knows about. You don't have to be in our industry to know that pharmacy, that drug costs are too high. It's on the news every day, right? You're if you have an experience, probably your parents have experienced it or a friend has experienced it. Why hasn't it been fixed? And I think that one of the reasons is that if we're honest, the large PBMs offer a really great service. And why do HR professionals come to work? I mean, it's to attract talent, retain talent, and keep people healthy and coming to work. And so, you know, a CVS or an ESI or an OptumRx, these are great names that give a lot of comfort to their employees. And so it's understandable. And they've built great product lines. What we've sort of seen is that everyone who's tried to solve this problem has said, well, leave them and come to us. Or stop doing this part of what you do with them and come to us. And this is really hard for HR professionals. I mean, it's disruptive for members. It's a lot of work. It's challenging to evaluate. And historically, it hasn't necessarily made a big change to actually cost because there are so many levers that can be pulled, as you were talking about. So what we sort of said was, if you can sit on top of this market, think of it as like hotels.com for drugs. The hotel market is completely transparent, right? Like, there's nobody who's hiding what the cost of a hotel room is. And yet when you go to book a hotel room, you probably use some sort of a comparison shopping tool that has expertise, ratings, information built in, and makes it easy for you to understand what you're about to buy and make those trade-offs. They don't have to say, Mary, you have to go out of business in order for us to help members make a better decision. That's really what we decided to do, was say, I don't care what you're doing. At the end of the day, you as an HR professional have to optimize the contract you're in with your PBM. It's going to be a PBM. So with your PBM, how can you optimize the contract you're in if you don't really in depth know what's going on there? You're not an expert at it. And the same thing for your employees and their families. When they get a prescription and it's really expensive, what do they do? I mean, how do I know that Dymista is literally fluticasone and azelastine mixed in the same bottle? And if I buy them separately, I'll save $400 a month. I can't pronounce those things. I don't know any of this stuff. I didn't go to school for it. Shouldn't somebody be helping me? So what we've done is we've sort of said, if you can take transparency plus expertise, you now can empower a change. The HR department has better information to make better decisions. That will move the balance of power and lower costs. And the member now has better information to make better decisions, to better advocate for themselves with their clinician, and that will lower costs. And that's exactly what we've seen happen with our product.
Eric, I've heard you speak before and you shared a incredible analogy story about how you were at, I believe it was your cardiologist's office or at a physician's office, and they told you, like, we're prescribing you this med. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, it was my primary care. And this just goes to show you really how pervasive this issue is. I'm very fortunate where I actually have a concierge doctor. Most people don't, right? So most people have to spend 8 minutes at the average is 8 minutes with your doctor. Like, that's all you're seeing them. I can actually text this guy. So like, it's not a matter of, it's not even a matter of like, do I have a good doctor? Do I have access? Is there time? It's a matter of the way the system is built today. Doctors are just not in a position to really take cost and value into account when they're writing prescriptions. So I went in, he looked at my blood test, and despite my youthful appearance and good looks, he was like, I think I'm seeing something stuff in your blood. I'd like to put you on this maintenance med. And his first suggestion was a drug that's on TV all the time with dancing people. And I know that that's $800. I only know it because I'm in the industry. And because I'm in the industry, I also know that there's another drug that's been around for 30 years that has tremendous clinical efficacy, very few side effects, is beloved by doctors, and literally on my health plan costs $2.82 a month. So $800 versus $2. So I said to him, hey, you know, that's interesting. And I agree with you. I want to do something about this issue, but why wouldn't I go on this drug? And I told him which one it was. And he said, oh yeah, that's a great drug. You want to do that? No problem. So this is like shocking to people when I tell them this story, because people assume that their doctors are being incredibly thoughtful about all aspects of a medicine when they're writing you that prescription, the cost, the value, the clinical efficacy, et cetera. And I don't think it's because doctors don't want to. Don't get me wrong. Doctors do their job to help their patients, but it is so hard. Every patient that walks in the door pays a different price. Every patient's in a different place with their deductible. Every patient it's just so difficult to stay on top of it. So unfortunately, they write what's top of mind. A lot of times that's the last drug rep that came in and said, hey, you know, next person that walks in with this condition, we've got this great new drug. And they go, awesome, we'll try it. Let's see how it goes. And so again, transparency plus an expertise built in. And when we talk about an expert system, like I said, we have these all over our lives today. Like, it's not so weird. If you were going to buy yourself a new toaster, you'd probably spend more time researching that toaster, looking what's the best model, what has the best quality, what do the consumer reports say, can I get a deal on it, can it be shipped to me on time, do I want to drive there? But yet when your doctor says, hey, I'm going to put you on this medication, it's going to probably save your life, we kind of go, okay. Right? Like we built a system designed to have more skin in the game, but haven't given people any tools to actually do that in a smart and efficient way.
And I think coming from the employee benefits point of view, part of the problem, and they're changing this now, is when it's just a standard copay, when it's a $15, $35, $75 copay, the employee doesn't really care. Like, all right, $75 is a little bit of money, but who cares? In the scheme of things, for me to push back on my doctor, why would I do so? Now that we're seeing more of a growth in the high deductible health plans and the consumerism aspect and the transparency in those, and they're getting these prescriptions, they're like, wait, that $75 prescription is actually $800, and now I have to pay $800 before I clear my deductible. I think that's playing a lot into what you are. So I'll leave it with that. Like, from an HR standpoint, education, stuff like that, but what should they be doing? We're in open enrollment season. We've solved the problems already. We've gotten you your Nobel Prize. Let's make you a future teller. What should the HR people be looking at during this open enrollment season and the 2026 to help bring down the cost or control these costs a little bit better?
Yeah, I think, again, the themes are pretty clear here, right? So first of all, make sure you have transparency to your data. It starts there. If you're not getting your data and you can't analyze your spending and look for trends, it's going to be impossible for you to get ahead of it, right? So you have to make sure that you get your data. It is now the law. You can demand it. You should be able to get it. Start there. From there, you can start to make some better decisions. And what I'd recommend is you want independent third parties involved as much as possible, right? So for sure, listen to everyone that you typically do that gives you information, the sellers, your consultant, et cetera. But today, there's a lot of new tools out there, and consultants are our main path to market. I mean, we help consultants help you with this, but we're also, outside of that consultant's company. So you get, again, a third-party objective view. It doesn't mean that it's the only view, but the more views you can get, the better decisions you can make. The second piece is pharmacy navigation, the space we're in, the idea that you are going to give a tool to your plan members so that they can better understand how they shop for pharmacy, if there's savings, make value-based decisions, advocate for themselves with their doctors, get clarity. It is incredibly inexpensive. Our ROI this year for across our book of business is going to be almost 4.7x. So it pays for itself and then some, and you're helping your members. So, you know, these tools are starting to really be out there, vetted, proven. They're inexpensive. And obviously, I'm very biased here that I think everyone should have one.
But
it doesn't have to be ours, right? So, like, to be clear, I hope it's ours. But I think that having a pharmacy navigation tool is just an absolute must have at this point for your benefits offering.
Perfect. I think you've given us a lot right now. We like leaving with a question, nothing to do with the topic, but we spoke about the future, we spoke about the present. Let's go to the past. If you could give one piece of advice to a 21-year-old Eric, could be RX related, could be not, but is there one piece of advice you would give yourself or you wish you knew X amount of years ago that you know today?
I have a mantra, and I'm not in my normal office today, but if I was, you would see I have this little picture behind me, and a lot of people have been commenting on it. And this little picture, it says, what if it all works out? And I think that Eric, to this day, still worries too much that things won't work out, despite all evidence of his life telling him that I've spent so much time worrying about things, and ultimately, they work out. And so I think, you know, that's been my mantra lately. And I've been trying to be more of a manifester of positivity. And I think it's been really good for me. And interestingly, it seems to work. So, you know, I would tell myself, it's all going to work out. You don't have to stay up all night worrying about it. You don't have to, you know, drown in your anxiety. It's all going to work out.
Eric, thank you very much. And if they want to connect with you or learn more about Script, how can they find more information?
Yeah, our website is scriptainsights.com. I'm Eric at scriptainsights.com. Feel free to reach out if there's anything I can do to help. We do a lot of analysis for potential clients. There's no charge to it. And I think you just get good data. Like, you know, you don't have to buy, but it's an interesting data point. We look at things from a very different point of view, and we're happy to help if someone is struggling with controlling their pharmacy costs and wanting to help their members with that issue.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure having you on our show. A huge thank you to our guest on today's episode, Eric Levin, CEO and founder of Scripta Insights.
Follow New York City SHRM and the Talk HR podcast on LinkedIn. We are New York City SHRM spelled out and Talk HR podcast. On X, we are New York City SHRM. And on Instagram, it is at NYC SHRM.
SHRM memberships are offering a 50% discount for new members via your local chapter. Please check out nycshrm.org to learn more.
And once again, we want to thank all of our New York City SHRM sponsors, Jackson Lewis, Aruta, Remote, BAL, Barst, Beacon Hill Staffing Group, Sentinel Group, Stream, and HR One Systems. Thank you, as always, for being such a great supporter of New York City SHRM, the HR podcast, and the overall HR community. As we move deeper into the open enrollment season, we're reminded that healthcare dominates the headlines and for good reason. Addressing pharmacy spend isn't just about cutting costs. It's about improving access, ensuring fairness, transparency, and shaping the future of care. Real change begins with leadership, and leadership starts with action. This reminds me of a quote by Barack Obama who says, "Change will not come if we wait for some other person or some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change we seek." This conversation doesn't end here. It continues with choices we make today and the transparency and hopefully a positive future in the medical space for open enrollment season. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you for listening.